Kim John Payne is an established professional when it comes to raising children. His simplicity parenting is a style that is being successfully embraced in many, if not most, cultures in our world. His latest book is The Soul of Discipline, a developmental roadmap for anticipating our relationship with our children, which Kim has noted in three cumulative discipline stages. I'm Robin Clare. Join us. It's Tributaries. Kim, where did you leave off with simplicity parenting and begin again with the soul of discipline?
Yeah, it's actually quite interesting because I actually wrote the soul of discipline first. That came before simplicity parenting. I actually had a very nasty mountain climbing accident, and I was laid up for almost a year. And I thought, well, you know, when I was able to move enough to be able to type again, I wrote The Soul of Discipline. Now, that was going back 12 years ago. But I got to the end of that project and thought, you know, there's something more basic that needs to happen first. Then it's like I could be talking to parents about discipline issues, but and giving all kinds of suggestions as to how behavior could be improved and how, but actually, I would be asking parents to sort of pour into a cup that was already overflowing with just too much overwhelm coming at families. It was like the tap was on, it was pouring into this cup, and good stuff, you know, good, clean, fresh water and all, but I actually felt I needed to be a part of just stemming that overflow of too much before any other information was fair to suggest. And so simplicity parenting was that aim of just trying to just slow down the flow into the family vessel, so to speak, so that it felt we weren't, you know, in a parenting sense, just in a continual state of mopping up the overflow.
Yes, yes.
and because of the success of simplicity parenting, which sort of surprised everyone, you know, that it became this number one bestseller and all that. I'm thrilled it has, but it's been, you know, a wonderful surprise. But because of that, then really this is a much more appropriate time to then turn back to the Soul of Discipline book. And then I just looked at it again after 12 or so years, and I'm awfully glad I didn't publish it then, because it really, I've learnt so much more. Parents have shared so much more with me that it's a, you know, a much, much better offering now than it would have been then.
So you got to add to it then before publishing?
It was a begin again, actually, Robin. It was really just back, go right the way back. I mean, many of the structures of how to discipline a child, how to work with discipline that's loving, warm, firm. That structure was always there, and also the structure of how to shift discipline as your child developmentally changes and grows. That stayed in place, but the stories. I mean, it's the stories that really colored things in a much better way.
Of course. Well, that's what's relevant. I find it very interesting that during a time when you were injured, you went right to the soul of discipline.
No one's pointed that out before. Yeah. Yes, it's, well, you know, it's interesting that at a time when I was incapacitated, at a time when I couldn't walk for quite a long while and I'd fractured my back and all that, I had a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, which is kind of scary, you know, to be a dad in that position.
Yes.
Any dad can think, oh boy, you know, you've got to provide for your family or mom, and, you know, how do you do that? But, you know, one of the things you can't do when you can't walk is chase after your kids. You physically can't chase them. And so it occurred to me way back then that the root word, the key aspect of the word discipline was disciple. who's being worthy of being followed. And when I finally was able to move again, albeit wheelchair, then crutches, and then back on my feet, and now it's all fully healed and all that. But the but I would need to connect with my kids, really connect, so that when I'd say, okay, let's go now, they would just merrily come along because there was no way I could chase after them and pick them up. They had to come of their own free will because they were deeply connected to their daddy. And it, that injury had a major kind of revelation and silver lining for me, that I realized you really have to connect with your kids via discipline. It's not a cold, harsh, steely thing where you boss your children around. A discipline is, as you know, is, like I said, with the word disciple, it's how do you get your kids to follow you happily and well and have fun in doing it.
Yes, absolutely. And you talk in Soul of Discipline about directions and instructions versus suggestions and requests. And on the surface, it may seem subtle, but you get down to it.
Yeah, you know, we've developed a habit, a parental habit, of requesting, of saying things like, you know, shall we all get into the car? Would you like to put your coat on? How about we go down to the store? And I when I hear that, I always love the tone. If I kind of listen away the words, the tone is always really nice because it's a parent trying to be polite and respectful and connect with their kids. So that part is really good. The part that is way less effective is that when we ask our children, shall we all get into the car, and they're little, because of just where they're up to in their development, they think we're genuinely asking. And they think they've got a decision to make, right?
Yes, yes.
And it, and it confuses them because when they say, well, actually, no, I'll stay. I'll just sort of stay up the tree. Thank you very much. Thank you for asking.
Right.
It causes a lot of frustration from the parent. Now, a child can pick that one up. A child can pick up that a parent is getting frustrated. But they're very, very literal. They're very connected to our emotions, but not connected to our words, which is why it's also strange to say to a young child, use your words, because the brain centers, the speech centers in the brain, are just not myelinated and not functioning very well. So when we give a child a direction, you know, warm and loving, but a very firm direction, now it's time to get in the car, or now we will, or, and that then secures a child and gives, well, it's actually literally giving a direction. Now we're getting, I mean, directions give direction, and instructions, well, they kind of build in a structure. The words aren't random, actually, in our language.
Yes.
And those directions help secure a child, and they can still be given lovingly. And I think it helps a little child. Ultimately, it just helps them feel safe.
Yes, yes. I can see that so simply when you speak about it that way. I found a similar thing with adults, just to divert a little bit. You know, if you ask someone, how are you, they all of a sudden are going to go and find something that oftentimes they're going to look for something that isn't right. And they're not going to really, I sort of like to go, okay, I know how you are. You're this perfect human being. Let's say something else than how are you, that's going to trip someone off into their mind.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's a. I guess what we're all striving for is to try do our best to connect with a child or with a friend or with a partner. It's ultimately about connecting, and that's what directions do. And also a direction where you're not giving the direction to a child while you're on the fly, while you're moving, because a child finds that much, because again, they're not so much in their speech centers. What I find so helpful with younger children is to, rather than say, shall we all put our coats on, is to actually just slowly, clearly start putting your own coat on, and then put your coat on, and then say, now it's time to put Joshua's coat on. Now it's time for you to put your coat on. Because children have a very, very active mirror neurons in their brain at the, between the ages of, right up until the age of about 6, 7, 8 even. When you do something, they inwardly, the brain inwardly mirrors it. That's why, you know, hence the name mirror neurons. And so if you do something first, do it, actually show it visually what it is you're, you know, if it's getting into the car, you pick up the keys, which signals to a child, oh, I know what that means. And then, and so on and so on, so that we don't get involved in over-explaining because, you know, way back, we, of course, and no one really wants to do this, but we used to hit children. Then we thought, okay, no, we don't hit kids. But then shouting became the new hitting. Mm. And now over-explaining has become the new shouting. It's like we explain our kids into submission. It confuses them. And again, it's a little bit stressful for them as opposed just to doing it, just simply doing it and then saying, and now you're going to do it. And here we go. And everyone is way happier. And it essentially helps the transitions a lot because that's when kids have a lot of discipline problems, a lot of behavior problems is when they're transitioning from one activity to another. And just giving a clear direction, showing them visually what's happening, and then off we go. And I'm not talking in a vacuum, I hope, or just kind of theory, because we have now, I think it's approaching 700 simplicity parenting coaches, like parenting educators, all around the world in the most amazing places, all from Asia to the far north to the deep to the far south of the globe, all over. And the feedback we get from these amazing coaches and the people who come along and participate in their sessions is very clear. That these processes around discipline and around simplifying a child's life are tremendously effective and connecting with our families.
Yes, and I like the act. You know, you are putting your coat on, and it really takes a step out of the metaphor or the formula, which happens so many times in the plethora of self-help books that are around. Yeah. And I like that.
Well, I'm not a big fan of parenting books, and I know that's weird because I write them. But it's
that's why you're writing them.
Well, because many many self-help and parenting books, in particular, place the parent in a secondary role and the parenting expert in a primary role, and our kids don't need us as parents to be de-alphaed, you know, to not be the alpha figure within their life. They need us to be alpha. They need us to be authoritative. And the way I really try hard to write my books is to give voice to what we know anyway, particularly instinctually. Like every parent pretty much knows that little kids, you have to parent them differently to tween ages, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds. And we all know that you've got to parent a child who's 17 very differently from one who's 9. This is just gut instinct. We know it. But there are so few books around, particularly about discipline, that actually differentiate the social, emotional, and neurological development of kids. And that's really the main framework of the Soul of Discipline book, is the developmental framework, which is very, very simple, but instinctually right on.
I would agree, and it certainly is. The book is strong throughout, but I appreciated that. And especially it serves someone, you know, if there's a busy parent and they've got a 4-year-old, they don't need today to read your whole book and find out what you do with a teenager or a tween. They can just focus on their child's age, see what your suggestions are and why and how it all fits, and then you know, keep the book on the bookshelf and maybe read the tween when your child is just before a tween and keep up with it that way. You speak about the three G's and...
Yes.
Is that why when you have a young child, you're going, gee, and then when they're a tween, you go, gee.
The metaphors that I've used, I mean, I think as parents, it's great to have an inner picture, because when push comes to, well, love, you know, in those moments when we're confronted with a child's behavior that is just not going well, we kind of need something that is pictorial and not intellectual. I at least that's the way I've discovered I work best, and so many other parents too. And the metaphor that is used in the book is that of the governor and the gardener and then the guide. So that when our children are little, we are the governor of our family state. We are the kind of benevolent dictator, but it's warm and it's loving, but we are in that governorship, that protection that a governor has. And then when our children hit the tween years, we transition, and it's important that we transition into being a gardener. And the gardener metaphor is because every good gardener will consider carefully, will look around, will listen in to the weather report and what the skies are doing, will look at the soil, will check if there's any invasive weeds, any pruning that's needed. And then when it's time to harvest, for example, a good gardener just harvests, is not tentative about it. It's the time, here we go. And the reason I use that metaphor for our 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds, and I know 13s have got teen after their name, but I think they're just practicing. Mm-hmm. They're just little apprentices at that age. Having, you know, I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she's just practicing. But a gardener metaphor for a parent is it's very wonderful when a little child gets to 9 or 10 and they grow up and they realize that mommy or daddy are going to listen to them, just like a gardener. You're going to listen and say, well, you know, what's your plan, sweetheart? What do you want to do? Okay. But most importantly, it's like, what's your plan? And then can you tell me your plan and it show me that it takes other, particularly family members, into consideration? Because a child at 9, 10, 11, 12 has got the social and emotional ability to do that, whereas a four-year-old does not, just simply does not. But the, not fully, but a 11-year-old, yeah, it's really fair to ask them, what's your plan and how does that affect others? And tell me all about it. Show me that you're basically showing empathy, you know, towards other family members, or they might not use that word, otherwise they'll roll their eyes. But then the gardener makes a decision. It's not that a 10, 11-year-old makes the decision, but it's important that they get to respectfully talk about how they see it. Okay, tell me how you see it. I'm really interested in how you see it. But then mom and I will make the decision. So that's the gardener metaphor. Then the third metaphor is that of the guide. And the reason I think that is pretty accurate to parenting a teen, and I have a 16-year-old at the moment, and my daughter's 16, I have another daughter who's 16, and is that a good guide will sense where the climber or where the hiker wants to go in their journey. They'll listen in carefully to what the aim of that sort of person going out into an expedition has in mind, and then we'll look at the map and say, well, you know what? If you go that direction, that's a long way round, and there's swamps there, or there's an ice bridge there which you might not want to cross because it's getting too warm. And basically, a guide knows the terrain, point number one, but a guide also really listens in to where that person wants to go. Now, the reason that metaphor I find is very close to to parenting or educating a teen is that teens can be spectacularly disinterested in adults' opinions. They do a really good job at that. You know, sometimes they'll sit in and listen, but a lot of the times they're much more interested in their life direction, and good for them, you know, rightly so. That's exactly what we hope, that they will be, their direction will be emerging of where they want to go in life. And as a parent, you think, great, okay, good. And so discipline-wise, when things go wrong, when things are not going all that well for a teenager, it's a really positive conversation to have is, was that a distraction? Did that take you sideways? Did that, like the New York City metaphor, was that a crosstown bus, or did it take you downtown to where you wanted to go? I had a conversation recently with my daughter about, she's very into sports and is, you know, enjoys it a lot and is good at it, and you know, the coach on the travel team that she's being invited to join wanted her to train four nights a week, play two days a week, and it was this massive commitment, really huge in terms of time. But my daughter wants to study sciences and is kind of thinking very ambitiously of studying medicine. And it's like, gosh, that's a big aim, sweetheart. You know, that's a really big one. Is joining the travel team, you know, going to work for you if you've got to cope with the level of classes that you're taking? So we spoke about it, her and my wife, Catherine, and I, we spoke about it. And, you know, ultimately she decided to not join the top-notch travel team, but she's actually going to join the rec travel team, the recreational league travel team, which is three nights a week training, one is optional, and then one game a week. And she is having a ball. She's having a wonderful time, but she's also got time for her homework and to focus on her direction, because her direction is getting good grades without killing herself. And that conversation could have got really fiery. You know, you can imagine, I could have said, look, you are just not joining that travel team. That is not going to work. Your behavior becomes really antsy and fresh when you are so tired, and I understand it, but it's not, and you know, that's not going to go well.
Right. And I'm wondering, when you're going to be with a teenager, especially someone who's 16, perhaps, you know, what if they walk in and on the kitchen table here's this book called The Soul of Discipline? Would you recommend a teen of that age read the book with you, or parts of it, or would you share that with them, or is that just putting too much responsibility elsewhere?
You know, it's kind of interesting because this book's you know, hanging around a little bit these days around my home, and the kids kind of look at it and they'll flip through it, but really what they're, I think mostly they're interested in their direction, and I don't know that sitting down reading it with, because it's written really for the parent. There's nothing in it that is totally embarrassing for a young child. In fact, you know, there are a number of parents who have said to me, you know, my daughter's been babysitting and she has found those sections on how to work with younger children really, really helpful. So I think as long as they're reading it, if they're interested in younger children and they're babysitting or they're doing some voluntary work and that sort of stuff, then it apparently has been quite useful.
And I could see that you talk about something orbiting around family value pillars. And as you were just speaking, respect and empathy are two great places to start. And that's great, because it really gives someone a place to stand by saying, well, we don't do that, whatever that might be.
Yeah. Yeah. That we is a really crucial one. You know, I touched on this a little bit in the Simplicity Parenting book, actually, and it comes up again in The Soul of Discipline, is that, you know, one of the things that we want to do is establish a really strong values, a really strong sense of we. This is the way we do it. Because, you know, frankly, some of the ways that you see going on in the world are really not the way you want to do it. They're a bit wacko and a bit worrying, and yet our kids also see it. And it's really helpful to not judge other parents. It's just to, I know many parents know this, but just to say to your kids, but that's not what we do. I understand that your friends all have an iPhone, an iPad, a computer and a television in their room, and probably some robotics and virtual reality, and who knows. But it's just not, that's not what we do. It's no judgment there. But one of the, where this sort of links in with discipline is direct, really, because when we apply discipline in our families, what we're doing is we're clarifying family values. And I don't mean for that to sound abstract. Every single time our kid comes home and uses a word that is really, you know, like, wow, where did that come from? And my daughter came home and in first grade and she used the word stupid head.
Sounds like first grade.
Day one, right? And I just, whoa. And I just took her aside and said, you are a beautiful and perfectly kind little girl. You are so kind to your mummy and daddy and sister and to your doggy. You're very kind. And that is an unkind word, and we just don't use that in our family. We try very hard not to use those words, and if they slip out, then we make good. Now, I wonder how we can make good with your sister. Really, it wasn't gentle and kind. I really moved in quick and said, whoa, we do not use that word. Now,
the soul of discipline, something we can all embrace. Kim John Payne will return next week. For any guest information, to listen to archives, of which we do have two shows with Kim regarding simplicity parenting, or to share resources and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. Podcasting on iTunes at Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.